Time to look at some stories from some other parts of the world that perhaps don't get as much reporting as they should. Jonathan DeBurka Butler is with us once again. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Venezuela we're going to first, where a 14-year-old has been killed.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've looked at things in Venezuela, so it was about time that we updated listeners on what was going on. And 14-year-old... boy was shot at a protest. Now, this happened in a town called Barquisimeto, which is in the northwest of the country. It has about two. It's a big place. It has 2 million people in it. An intensification, shall we say, and the whole country has seen an intensification of protests against Maduro since the beginning of April. And as a result of the escalation protests, there has been an escalation in violence. And five people have died since April the 6th, and one of them is this 14-year-old boy. As I said, this happened just last week. A lot of different people are being blamed for this. So there's groups of sort of pro-government vigilantes, I suppose you could call them, called colectivos. And what they do is they go around cracking down on protests against the government, as you can imagine. Mm. But the army and the police are also involved here because they're being sent out by the government to put down these protests. And the protests are gaining momentum, and they show no signs of stopping. And I suppose what's different this time is that over the last 2 years, we've seen the opposition, led by Enrique Capriles, and in prison Leopoldo López, and their support base is generally middle class or wealthy. Okay, I mean, those two guys themselves. So Capriles, his father brought craft into Venezuela, so he's quite a wealthy guy. Leopoldo López was educated in Harvard or Yale or something like that, speaks very good English. So the two of them are quite wealthy. But the difference now is that because of the economic situation in Venezuela and people can't get basic commodities, can't get medicine, people in the slums in Caracas, the support base of Maduro's government is beginning to fragment now, and those people are now coming out onto the streets and supporting the opposition. There were municipal elections that were supposed to be called in the middle of this year, but the government are dragging their heels on that, and that seems to be the rallying point which the opposition are gathering around to make what appears to be some sort of a final shove to get rid of Maduro. But whether he's still going to hang on or not, because he's been doing this now for a long time.
Yes, he has.
We still don't know. Again, as always, it's down to the army and whether they're going to continue to support him.
Yeah. Do they have a reason to continue to support him?
Well, they might do in that we don't know. On the surface that we don't know publicly. But I mean, I suppose the status quo is there. The people that are in place. I mean, how long have they been there for now? Chavez came to power, what is it, 10 years ago, over 10 years ago? So presumably their positions, if they stay where they are, they're relatively safe.
Yeah, I suppose Chavez still had a kind of an aura around him.
That's the big thing.
Maduro doesn't have.
He doesn't. He just doesn't have the charisma as such. But he's a wily character, or at least his advisors are. I mean, when the opposition took over the parliament late last year, he completely changed the constitutional court so that anything that went against him in parliament was brought to the constitutional court, and the judges says, oh, no, you can't do that. It's against the constitution. Mm. So he's blocking every piece of legislation that's going through. He's talking about having talks and he keeps rowing back on that. And he's making all of the, he's delaying things and using delay tactics. So he's wily enough.
Yeah. An event such as 14-year-old getting killed, is this kind of thing widely reported within Venezuela?
That I don't know. I have to be honest with you. I don't know what the controls are. I mean, it seems that the opposition certainly play by the book, all right, and if you know what I mean, and are looking to do that, if you know what I mean. So these things would, I think, get reported around there, although there is an element of control, and certainly there is a propaganda war going on between the two sides, that's for sure.
Right, Spain we're going to go to now, and vegans are annoying. apparently. So this is a vegan cafe in Spain, and they've done what?
Yeah, this is El Vergel de Tarragona, which presumably is in Tarragona. And they put a sign out on their door saying, "We don't like bottle feeds based on cow's milk. Please don't use them in the restaurant." And this is... annoyed some people. A mother who was in the restaurant and was presumably giving her baby a bottle feed was told to stop doing it, and she took to Twitter to say that she had been humiliated by being reminded of doing this. Now, there's been an ongoing sort of Twitter war here between those in favour and those against. But the restaurant itself say they're not backing down, and they said in a statement that mothers who have been genuinely humiliated are those raped throughout their lives to have babies that are then stolen and butchered so that humans can take the milk that was for them. These mothers are cows, sheep and goats, the victims of the bottle you feed your child.
Okay.
So they're sticking to their guns.
They certainly are. Now, is there such a thing as a bottle feed... A formula that's vegan?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I doubt it.
So if a woman can't breastfeed, or and lots of women listening will know how difficult that is, even in the best set of circumstances. But an awful lot of women can't do that. These guys will just chuck you out. They'll make you your baby starve,
or they'll remind you, or they'll remind
their
you.
Principle.
Yeah, or they'll remind you that you're not supposed to be doing it, and presumably you'll then walk out. But they're sticking to their guns.
Right, Iceland we're going to next. And this is an unusual story in the sense that is it IKEA are going to be making something on behalf of people rather than the other way around?
Yeah, indeed. You've stolen another one of my jokes.
Anyway. Sorry.
Anyway, yes, this is IKEA's building an apartment block in Reykjavik for its employees. And it's doing it... I think it's a great story. It's doing it because they want them to have somewhere affordable to live. So it's taking responsibility for its employees in a way. So they're building 36 flats, and they're saying that they're going to be available to staff next summer. And they're doing this because the rents are in Reykjavik have skyrocketed and it's unaffordable. So they're saying that they're going to be renting these out. And the lowest rent is expected to be about 100,000 krona, which is 840 euros per month. Now, in comparison to the current rate in Reykjavik city centre, you pay about 1,450 euros for a one bed flat in Reykjavik.
Crikey.
Which is
staggering. Why have the prices shot up in
well,
in
they're blaming tourism, and they're saying that people are just renting out these apartments to tourists, and the tourists are willing to pay, of course, because they're only there for a short period. Seems to be happening in a lot of places that this what is that new thing where you go and you rent your apartment?
Airbnb. Airbnb is making creating a house. Well, I suppose Iceland's
not
a small
them specifically,
country. Yeah, but those types of things. Schemes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I mean, house ownership in Iceland is about 77%.
Yeah.
So presumably the rental stock isn't. There's not that much to rent, so that means that prices
would put
are high. So
dissimilar to here, then.
Absolutely,
really.
And last week we were looking at millennials in Australia, so it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah, and is it known, will any of these flats, will they look very IKEA-ish? Do we know they're going to look any different to normal flats?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I assume they are going to be, they are going to use their own furniture, but, I would imagine.
One would assume so. Now, Kazakhstan we're going to go to next, and they're going to change the alphabet there.
Yes, as always, these stories are fantastic from this part of the world. This is President Nursultan Nazarbayev, who's one of these dictators for life. He's been there since the early 1990s, so it almost goes without saying at this stage. But he wants to change the alphabet from the Cyrillic-based alphabet that's been there for 80 years. So that's the Russian alphabet. And as I said, they've been using it there for about 80 years. And he wants to go to a Latin-based alphabet. Okay, so the idea is, or we're led to believe, that he's trying to emphasize Kazakh culture here, and he wants to distance himself from the sort of Russian hangover from the period of communism.
Okay.
So that's why he's doing it. So it's an interesting move, but he's putting the pressure on the authorities to get with the program here, because he wants teachers to be trained to use it by 2018, and all of the textbooks in this in the education system will have to be switched by 2018, and the whole country, everything, legal documents, all sorts of things, will have to be switched over by 2025. So it's very ambitious, but
it is, but does that mean millions of people will have to learn to read in what will look to them like a completely different language?
About 17 million people, yeah, absolutely, will have to learn to read in that language. But again, the whole move is all in the context of what's going on in the Ukraine, all of these countries have Russian minorities in them,
yes,
right? And
yeah,
Kazakhstan has a large one, okay? So just to briefly go through this, in 1970, the population had 42% Russians and 32% Kazakhs. Now, that's changed to go just to 23% Russian and 63% Kazakhs, but there's still 4 million Russians on the border with Russia,
right,
in Kazakhstan.
Okay.
So whether he's trying to sort of reprogram them to come in with, you know, Kazakh culture and make them look away from Russian culture, I think that's probably part of the plan.
So how are relations between Kazakhstan and Russia?
Weird, as in all of those kind of things. So the Russians rent a space station,
yes,
off them. There's a huge plot of land that they have. So in that sort of private sphere,
totally, as I understand it, is wildly polluted as well with radioactive waste as well.
I didn't know that.
Rocket launches over the years.
I didn't know that, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. But then on the surface, the Kazakhs lend support to the Ukrainians, and they have a kind of a cool enough relationship. Now the Russians have said that this move, you know, to move from the alphabet is a geopolitical move.
Mm.
And the Kazakhs are saying, no, it's a cultural thing and we've been planning it for a long time. It's part of Nazarbayev's vision. And they'll go back and forth and it'll all be forgotten about. As
right.
long as the Kazakhs have oil and various different minerals and land that the Russians can rent, you know, they'll be fine.
Right. And presumably the process of translating everything has already been done.
Yeah, I would imagine.
That might be a tricky and interesting kind of a process.
Yeah, I was actually looking around to see, had the actual alphabet been devised yet?
Mm.
I didn't see any evidence of it, but I assume some system is in place.
That's an interesting shift. One texter says, fair enough to that Spanish restaurant. Why would a vegan restaurant want animal products to be brought and consumed on site when they're doing everything they can to promote plant life? Somebody else texted in to say, I use soya baby formula for my 3 kids. So yes, there is vegan baby formula. So there you go. Right, Israel we're going to go to next. And a British man has been stopped from entering the country.
Yes, this is a civil engineering professor from the University of Birmingham University. His name is Kemal Hawash. He's British-Palestinian. And he was going back to East Jerusalem to visit his long-distance relatives, or whatever you want to call them, with his 5-year-old son and his wife. And he was stopped at the airport, taken into a small room, and he was presented with a pile of papers, as he said himself, and the customs officer was pointed to tweets that they said he had written. Now, he's you know, he's outspoken, and he is a member of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And he told them that he was the vice chair of that particular organisation until January. He's now on the executive committee. I looked at some of his writing, and he's well known within that cohort, shall we say. But he is annoyed that he was stopped and he was put on a plane back to Brussels, and he's now back in the UK. But it's part of a new law that the Israelis have passed. They passed it in March of this year, so the beginning of March of this year, which is anybody who is connected with this boycott, divestment and sanctions group will be stopped from coming into the country. And they've taken action on it.
Right. And that particular movement, I suppose, has drawn some inspiration from in the 70s and 80s against South Africa.
Yes, I think it's a direct descendant of it as
that,
such. Yeah.
Is to try and isolate them. Yet, on what basis, though? I mean, because it's, as far as I know, this particular movement doesn't have any particular violent associations or anything.
The Israeli government, according to the BDS, I suppose, their spokesperson says, according to the Israeli government, human rights activism is a security threat. Now, basically, that's their interpretation of the Israeli government's law. Okay, but it's a law that they passed in March, and they it says, I can't remember the exact wording, but anybody associated with it or who's seen to be advocating the boycotting of Israeli goods is not going to be issued a visa.
I wonder what they base that on, though. I mean, if you put up a random tweet one day,
yeah,
could that just end
yes,
up when you're trying to enter Israel at some
yeah,
point?
Absolutely.
Right, Zambia, we're going to go to next, and opposition leader has been jailed there.
Yes, and more to the point, he's been charged with treason, and this is Hakainde Hichilema. He's been around for, he's run in, I think, 4 presidential elections there, and he's lost all of them. Most recently, back in 2016, he lost by only 100,000 votes against President Edgar Lungu. And very strange circumstances. Last weekend, the two of them were in their motorcades, and they found themselves in the same part of town. Hmm. And Hichilema wouldn't allow President Lungu's motorcade to pass. And like some sort of a scene out of some really bad, you know, US cop show.
Yeah.
They nearly collided. Okay. Now, Hichilema disappeared, but a day later, 100 police turned up at his house and used tear gas to get him out of the house. They arrested him, and he's since been charged with treason, as I said. And he could get anything from 15 years to the death penalty for this. The death penalty is highly unlikely, however, but you know, he could be in big trouble.
Is the treason just blocking the president's motorcade? Is yes, that the basis of the charges?
Putting the president's life in danger and unreasonable, reckless and criminal conduct. There you go.
Wow. And in all these previous elections that both men have contested and...
No, Lungu and Hichilema only contested the last election together, okay. But you're right in one way, it was the same party that Hichilema was against.
And are there any questions over the results of those elections?
Oh, well, that's what Hichilema is all about. And this is why the government wants to put him away, shall we say. I mean, he went to the Constitutional Court last year, and because of irregularities in the Constitutional Court, threw it out. But he's got closer and closer. So his first campaign, I think he came third, and he won about 20% of the vote, and he's got up to about 47% the last time out. So he's getting frustrated, I think.
Yes.
From the government's point of view, closer.
Though to arrest the main opposition leader on the basis of something so, you know, willfully childish, it's hardly going to prompt a great response from his supporters, I wonder the thought.
But it's a photo op, because if he forgives him, he'll be seen to be benevolent. And when Lungu came into power, one of the first things he did was he pardoned 323 men or women who were on the death row.
Mm.
You know, so he's being seen as a kind of a benevolent leader.
Yeah. Will this prompt a lot of protests?
I haven't seen any yet, although because the parties have actually said, listen, don't come out and protest, because we don't want the government to use this as an excuse to bring in martial law. So just stay cool.
Right. Australia we're going to go to next. And this is a story about 3 platypuses. And they met a cruel fate.
Yeah, it's a bizarre story because nobody really knows why it happened. It's very quick. 3 platypuses were found, 2 of them decapitated, in Botanic Gardens, the Albury Botanic Gardens in New South Wales. Since I saw this story initially, a reward has actually been put up of $5,000 for anybody who has information about it. But bizarre, decapitated, the remains were found, and nobody knows why.
Hmm. It's just perhaps people just being wantonly violent.
Yes, it could be. I thought that maybe it could be. They could be. Sometimes these people who collect these animals, they do it to order or whatever, and maybe wanted something for their collection, but it's disgusting.
How bizarre. Right, Japan we're going to go to finally. And this is affects not just Japan, I assume. That this is something that should make the whole world be concerned. There's a crisp crisis.
There is a crisp crisis indeed.
It's hard to say.
Might be. I'm surprised that Enda Kenny hasn't come out and made a statement here saying that there's an opportunity for Ireland here. But Calbee Inc., who are a Japanese snack company, have halted the production of I think 15 types of potato chips, as they call them there, but crisps, as we all know, is the real name. And it sparked something of a crisis with their most popular brand, a pizza flavored crisp, selling for $15 on the internet. Yeah,
wow.
They usually retail for about $170, but they're so popular that they're selling for $15 on the internet. It's obviously become something of a fad here.
My word. And what's causing the shortage?
There is a bad crop in Hokkaido, which is the northern island of Japan. And it produces... it's a key potato producing place, and the crop has been devastated by typhoons last year. So they're short. And because of restraints on imports,
They can't get more potatoes. The fools. The crazy fools. If only they'd known. Right, over the next week or so, what kind of things will be happening, Jonathan?
Yes, I think, well, we'll start with New Mexico. Representatives in the parliament there are hoping that the government will sign a bill to stop lunch shaming. So this is the idea of sending kids home who don't have the $2 to pay for their lunch in school. And sometimes they send them home with stamps on their arms saying, please tell Timmy, or please have $2 for Timmy's lunch yesterday. So that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they're saying they don't want that anymore, and hopefully the governor's going to sign off on that. Kurdish Iraqi parties are going to meet during the week to discuss a date for a referendum on whether they stay or go when things settle down in Iraq, as in, are they going to set up Kurdistan?
Okay. Right.
So that's quite a big deal, actually.
That is quite a big deal.
Given all the mess that happened last week in Turkey.
What are the indications?
It's hard to know. I'd say they'd probably go for it all right in the end. But
though, then again, they would be, it's landlocked. It'd be dependent entirely upon Iraq.
Yes.
To get access to things, because probably Turkey just shut down their border immediately.
Ooh, I don't know about that. The Turks, I think its biggest foreign investor is actually Turkey, and I think they use Kurdistan to kind of keep a rein on things. It's a funny relationship.
Yes.
A very funny relationship.
Right. And of course, this weekend in France.
This is the big one, the presidential elections. Le Pen, Macron, even François Fillon is coming into the picture now, and this dark horse, Mélenchon, this far left guy. It's absolutely fascinating to see what's going to happen there.
What's interesting is that it's far from a two-horse race.
My money's on Fionn, to be honest with you.
Really? Yeah. Okay, well, we shall see. Jonathan, thanks a million. As ever, Jonathan de Burke-Butler there.